From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Trump administration's practice of separating undocumented children from their parents caught crossing the border gained steam over the weekend. Several Father's Day demonstrations took place, most notably outside a detention center in McAllen, Texas, where children are being held. Press were given brief access to the center, from which have emerged disturbing photos and videos of children inside chain-link cages with floor mattresses and foil blankets. Donald Trump has continued lying to the American public about the justification for family separation, claiming falsely that a law passed by Democrats has forced him to institute the practice. First Lady Melania Trump also participated in the charade, issuing a statement over the weekend claiming she, quote, hated seeing children locked up and calling on, quote, both sides to resolve the problem. Well, it was Attorney General Jeff Sessions last month who had announced the U.S.'s official policy of separating children from their parents, saying point blank, quote, if you don't want your child separated, then don't bring them across the border illegally. And General John Kelly, White House Chief of Staff, had said last year when he headed Homeland Security that ripping children from parents would be a good deterrent against undocumented immigration. Current DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen tried to add nuance to the practice, saying over the weekend that people seeking asylum and arriving at the official checkpoints where asylum applications are processed would not be prosecuted and would therefore not be separated from their children. But the migrants and refugees arriving are often unaware of the distinction or of the official entry points for asylees. The issue has exploded into the national consciousness over the past week, prompting even some Republicans to express disgust at Trump's practice. Former First Lady Laura Bush published an op-ed invoking the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II, and the United Nations has also condemned the U.S. Meanwhile, doctors across the nation are warning of the severe psychological impacts of family separation on both children and parents. The American Psychological Association wrote Trump an open letter, and the group Physicians for Human Rights has collected more than 13,000 signatories to a letter opposing family separation. Joining me from that organization is Catherine Hampton. She coordinates Physicians for Human Rights' Asylum Network program, which is an initiative that recruits, trains, and supports a network of clinicians to provide forensic evaluations for asylum seekers and advocates for human rights-based immigration policies. Welcome to the program, Catherine.
Thanks so much for having us, Sonali.
So many issues to talk about, but the main one that I want to start with you is why doctors are so deeply concerned about what the United States is doing. We've now heard from Homeland Security that about 2,000 children in just a few weeks have been separated from their parents. What are the impacts that doctors worry about on both children and parents of this kind of practice?
So PHR's Asylum Network has actually been performing forensic evaluations of asylum seekers and other immigrants who are seeking different forms of humanitarian relief for 25 years. So the organization's network of over 1,000 clinicians really has decades of experience working with this population. And there are two key findings that I would really like to highlight for your viewers. One is that our clinicians have documented the severity of the persecution that people are fleeing. So people don't lightly take up their children in their arms and come to another country and cross a border. So the levels of violence and torture that are being inflicted on many of the people who are crossing the border is extremely severe. And I think that's really underplayed by this administration. And the second really important finding, which has been consistent over decades, is the crucial nature of family unity for the resilience of children and for enabling them to successfully adapt to these stressful circumstances. So we've worked with unaccompanied children, with families, with reunited families, and family unity is absolutely crucial for children in coping with this kind of stress. And then in terms of medical research, so many of our clinicians are also researchers, and the research coming out of past decades has clearly demonstrated that these kind of adverse childhood experiences harmful long-term effects. So it's not only that children are traumatized, you know, today, tomorrow, next week, but actually in the long term, this can impact their social, cognitive, and emotional functioning. It can affect their academic achievements over their lifetime. It can cause really long-term psychological damage.
There are some heartbreaking stories we're hearing about one Honduran woman who had her child that she was breastfeeding being snatched away. Another story of an immigrant man who, a father, who was so distraught at being separated from his children, from his family, that he had to be put into a padded room and then hung himself, killed himself. The impacts are on parents too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The parents themselves are undergoing such extreme stress. Again, otherwise they wouldn't have chosen this option, which is so daunting and at times risky in coming to this country to find safety. So absolutely, the impact on parents is devastating as well.
The most sacred responsibility a person who has a child has is to care for your child, to provide for your child. Now, what do you make of the claims from Kirstjen Nielsen, head of Homeland Security, saying we don't have a policy of separating children, but then Jeff Sessions saying your child, you know, if you don't want to be separated from your child, don't bring them across the border. The administration seems to be openly contradicting itself.
So in this case, the zero tolerance policy is directly resulting in family separation because the administration is insisting that all people entering our borders must be criminally prosecuted, even though that's an administrative infraction. There's no need to criminally prosecute 100%. By law, there's no need to criminally prosecute 100% of people who are approaching the border. And they're also insisting that family separation is a necessary practice resulting from that policy decision. So absolutely, we affirm, along with other groups, that if there isn't a policy or practice around family separation, why are thousands of children being separated suddenly from their parents? And I think the crucial legal standard to remember here is the best interest of the child. So the recognized legal standard for ensuring that we respect the rights of children and families is that everything that must be done in accordance with the best interest of the child standard. And clearly, separating a child from their parents is never going to be in their best interest.
The Father's Day demonstration that took place outside McAllen, outside the detention center in McAllen, Texas, enabled press to be invited in for a brief period of time at this particular detention center. We've seen the videos and the photos coming out of these, out of this particular detention center. And I'm wondering, Catherine, what you make of the conditions that have now become public. These children being held in chain link cages with the foil blankets, mattresses just thrown on the floor. Under President Obama, we saw family detention, but now looking back, the conditions that families were being held in seem almost humane by comparison, because at least children weren't separated from their parents and they were held in facilities that resembled, you know, daycare centers. What we saw coming out of McAllen, Texas over the weekend looked like prison for little children.
The conditions that were reported are absolutely horrifying, and it really shows that the level of unpreparedness and the lack of due consideration for child welfare implications of this policy. And that's not going to change because, if family separations are continuing, I don't see how you can suddenly build, you know, beautiful buildings which could, you know, house people in proper conditions. But I think what PHR really wants to emphasize is, even in the cases where children can be placed in foster families, what medical research has demonstrated is that children fare worse in foster homes than when they remain with their parents. And that's nothing against foster families. That's just the medical academic literature supports the fact that children belong with their parents. That's just how we're made, how our psychological makeup functions. We're absolutely programmed to want to remain with our primary caregivers when at all possible.
And then we are, of course, hearing that because so many children are being taken away from their parents, the detention centers are running out of room. And what started out as a leaked report about a tent city being built in the desert has now actually turned out to be something true, that there is apparently in the works, there are tent cities that will house children for many days at a time, And we've just entered summer. We are, on the cusp of entering summer officially. So tent cities in the desert, with, children. So not only could that be impacting family separation, be impacting their mental health, their physical health is also likely deeply in question, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the conditions that are being reported and the idea that children can be housed in tent cities is absolutely an example of cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment. This is completely unacceptable, and I really feel that it's a constitutional violation as well.
So, for former First Lady Laura Bush invoking the internment of Japanese Americans seems like it's exactly the kind of thing that we need to be reminding ourselves of. Interesting that it's coming from, of course, a Republican rather than a Democrat or a non-Republican.
I found former First Lady Laura Bush's letter to be very moving, especially because she's writing us from Texas. So she's fully aware for many years of the challenges associated with border management, and yet she still insists that as a nation, we have a moral and legal obligation to ensure that we treat people humanely who come to our borders.
I mean, you can certainly fault previous administrations for feeding into the conditions that have made what Trump has done more possible or easier to implement. But have we seen anything like this before? I mean, I mentioned Obama's decision to do family detention, and in the last few years of his administration, deportation rates did go down. But he wasn't as good a friend to the human rights of immigrants as we would have liked him to be. But are we seeing what we're seeing now under Trump? Is this a whole new chapter, a whole new level of cruelty?
Absolutely. What we're seeing is as an increased preference for detention when it's completely unnecessary. So there are other pending civil litigation lawsuits at the moment, which are talking about how the now under this administration, many ICE field offices are not granting parole, for example, to asylum seekers. So we're seeing a ramping up of detention generally, and this is really fitting into that pattern in a very terrifying way. And exactly as we've been mentioning, the conditions, simply detaining people is never going to result in better conditions than if you allow them to remain in the community. And it's what we would like to stress is this is completely unnecessary because there have been many studies done by policy groups that show that actually case management in the community results in compliance and cooperation with immigration. So there's no need to detain someone to ensure they're going to show up for their immigration hearing. Actually, if you just allow them to remain in the community with their family members, they can be in a case management program that's going to do exactly the same thing, and it's much more cost effective as well.
We mentioned former First Lady Laura Bush. Well, current First Lady Melania Trump issued a statement. So she issued a formal statement saying she hates to see children separated from their families, and that it was up to, so one might think when you start with that statement that she might be about to contradict her own husband. But then she basically seemed to tout the similar line, saying that she hopes both sides of the aisle can finally come together to achieve successful immigration reform. What do you make of her statement?
I think in general, that line of reasoning is, to me, approaching a level of using children as a pawn in a political game. And children are not a pawn. Children are people who have human rights, just as we all do. And it's completely unacceptable.
I'm glad you brought that up as an issue because that seems to be what's happening here. That Republicans who support Trump and Trump himself are basically saying, vote for our immigration policies. And there are now two bills that are being taken up by Congress, neither of which are acceptable, I think, to immigrant rights advocates, but one of which will end family separation. And it seems as though children are being held hostage to achieve this political gain. This is just a whole new level of reality, it seems, or lack of reality that we've achieved. And so I mentioned at the beginning of this of our interview that Trump was basically lying, and it was interesting to see the New York Times even issued an op-ed openly calling the president out, and many mainstream media outlets have also simply said out loud the president is lying when he blames Democrats for issuing the call to, or for passing a law that forces his hands. Wouldn't a simple phone call to the Department of Homeland Security from Donald Trump at the White House end this practice within an instant?
Absolutely. So this practice is a direct result of the zero tolerance policy that was announced by Attorney General Sessions last month. So there is, Trump could end this literally in a moment by calling, you know, I mean, he's sitting in D.C. with Attorney General Sessions and Secretary Nielsen. He can end it in a moment if he wanted.
What do you make of the international condemnation that the United States has received? I mean, Trump is coming fresh from a summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, and many people have rightly brought up the fact that, sure, North Korea has a terrible record of human rights violations, and now here we are in the United States essentially reaching the level of violating human rights that is practiced by many of the countries that we have criticized ourselves. I mentioned that the United Nations has also condemned the U.S. And I know you've worked in many international situations, seeing the treatment of asylum seekers and refugees worldwide. How does the U.S. compare with the rest of the world?
No one else in the world is separating children from their parents in this way. So it's
wow.
Just shameful and embarrassing that the United States is doing this. And as you mentioned, the Office of the High Commission for Human Rights has condemned this as a child rights violation. The UN Refugee Agency has emphasized that family unity is a fundamental tenet of refugee law. And we signed up for the Refugee Convention. You know, we are a signatory, and we executed that treaty in our own law in the 1980 Refugee Act. So we're violating our own laws by implementing this policy.
So no other country in the world is doing what we're doing. Even European nations, which are dealing with their own crisis of migration and refugee flows and sort of grappling politically with this issue, it's become a massive political issue in Germany right now. Even in Europe, you don't see this happening.
No, I mean, there was a boat, there's a boat, you know, floating in the Mediterranean that was rejected by Italy and Malta and has been accepted to dock at a port in Spain. And I mean, they're not separating those children and parents, you know, so. Even at the front lines of the migration crisis, where they're dealing with millions of refugees, which are not even numbers that we're seeing here, you know, nobody has a practice of separating children and parents.
Isn't it true that we've already had lowering numbers of immigrants coming to the U.S. border, that this is less of a crisis than the Trump administration is trying to make it out to be?
Exactly. Yeah. So we're not seeing a rise in numbers. What we have been seeing in terms of the demographics are a rise in family units who are arriving together. And from a child protection standpoint, I think it's preferable for children to come with their parents than to be unaccompanied and to cross the borders all by themselves. So, I wouldn't say that it's a crisis in terms of the actual numbers that are crossing.
Catherine, I've asked this of some of the other guests on our program, and it's not really clear yet, but how is the government keeping track of children and parents? If a child is taken away from a mother or father, how is the government identifying which family member belongs to whom?
So this is the most horrifying part, actually. It's something that we've mentioned in our public statements. There is no interagency mechanism in place to officially track, parents and children and to reunite them. So you can track detainees, you can track children, but there's no official body for ensuring that that happens effectively. And NGOs have been reporting consistently that, you know, people are being deported without their children. People don't know where their children are. There's a hotline, but it's not functioning. So I think that's another really horrifying aspect of this policy, is that insufficient resources and thought were given to how family reunification is going to take place.
So that means that a parent or two coming over the border with a child or two would now, under these new rules, be prosecuted for violating immigration law policies and laws. So have their children separated. It's possible that the parents might be getting processed, facing trial, and being deported without their children.
Yes, this is actually happening. This is actually taking place in our country, which is unbelievable. And if you have, now that they're separating children who are so young, if you have a child who's 18 months old, how is that child supposed to say what their parents' names are? how are you supposed to reunite that children with their family members? I mean, this is absolutely terrifying.
And who is taking care of these children? So we have, in a traditional prison environment, there is a guard. In a detention center housing children as young as 18 months old, are there professional child care, you know, are there child care professionals that know what to feed a child, know how to care for a child, will be making sure their diapers are changed, they're getting potty trained, they're, you know, getting the right kind of sleep and food? I mean, if you take custody of an 18-month-old child, you will be essentially abusing them unless you can have a professional caregiver.
Well, this is absolutely true. I mean, children can't sleep on the same schedule that a grown person can. Children have different nutrition needs. They have different social needs, emotional needs. And I think that's really where the difference with this policy and the policy under previous administrations really shows itself, because at least if you had an unaccompanied minor who's 14 years old, you know, you can make some adaptations and maybe provide some kind of care for them. But with children being separated who are this young, it's extremely overwhelming for the system. So the agency which is in charge of caring for these children is the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And as I mentioned, they have a foster family system in place, but they simply don't have the capacity. So that's why the tent city idea is coming up, because they're completely overwhelmed. They weren't set up to suddenly receive thousands of very young children, and the system is completely ill-equipped to deal with this. As you mentioned, the result is that, you know, children are being held under cruel and degrading conditions that are inhumane.
It feels as though our country is literally kidnapping children.
Yeah, I would say so.
Is this an existential moment, a crisis of existential proportions for the country? I know when Trump was elected, it felt like the most unimaginable things were going to start happening. But I don't think I foresaw that we would be in this moment now. We've had dark moments in our past. Very dark moments, and we certainly, you know, this is one of the few countries that imprisons children. We who have been convicted of committing certain crimes. We do have juvenile detention up until recently, until the Supreme Court stepped in. Children were even being held without the possibility of parole. And so we are a country that has stepped into these dark places before, but on this level, such a mass scale. So we're now talking about more than 10,000 children in total being held without their parents. I feel like this is a make or break moment for, this is a test of this nation's character.
This is really the time for our country to remember that we're a nation of immigrants, that our forebears came here and felt thankful and grateful to find a place where they could live safely. My own mother was a green card holder until she became a citizen recently. So I think these kind of fears and this wider perception that somehow that immigrants are criminals or that they don't deserve to be here is absolutely crazy to me, because we're literally a country full of people who came here from somewhere else, with the exception of, you know, Native American people who were here all along. So,
and of course, African Americans, ancestors who were brought here forcibly through our institution of slavery. So I mentioned the letter that Physicians for Human Rights has had more than 13,000 signatories for so far. Who signed that letter? Is it primarily medical professionals, or did people, ordinary Americans, also sign that? And then there was a separate letter also by the American Psychological Association that sent an open letter to the Trump administration, which was, I think, less a petition and more just an open letter. But the PHR letter, who signed it, and can people still sign onto it?
So the PHR letter, actually, at the time that I'm giving this interview, we have 14,000 signatures.
Wow.
So this is healthcare professionals. It started out with the group of our 1,000 network members who are clinicians from different health backgrounds. So physicians, psychologists, licensed clinical social workers, licensed professional counselors, nurses. But now it's expanded. So now we have, people who are joining the movement and signing up from all over the country. And the American Psychological Association also officially endorsed our letter and signed it. There are a lot of petitions going around, so I definitely encourage. I saw Natalie Portman has a letter out, So I would encourage you to sign that if you're not a health professional, or if you are, please sign on to our letter. We're still taking signatures. Our letter has been delivered already to the Department of Justice and Department of Homeland Security, but we're still keeping tabs on everyone who signs up and updating our numbers. So
it seems as though this administration is unfortunately immune to what the majority of the country thinks. It's only seems vulnerable to what its own base, what Trump's own base thinks. So unfortunately, a minority of Americans is holding up the things that this country now seems to practice. So we'll certainly see. Lawmakers are, of course, also getting involved. Some Republicans have joined some Democrats in calling for an end to this. There are two bills that we discussed on our program earlier that are being taken up on the floor, but it seems as though there's demonstrations happening around the country as well. Keep Families Together demonstrations that I know our audience can find via Twitter, hashtag Keep Families Together. So we'll certainly post links to some of those resources from our website. But your organization's website, can you give out the website for Physicians for Human Rights?
Yes, you can find us at physiciansforhumanrights.org. So no spaces, just Physicians for Human Rights.
And we'll post a link to that from our website. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
Catherine Hampton coordinates Physicians for Human Rights' Asylum Network Program, an initiative which recruits, trains, and supports a network of clinicians to provide forensic evaluations for asylum seekers and to advocate for human rights-based immigration policies. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.